From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Everybody talks about the weather, said Mark Twain, but nobody does anything about it. Then there's American education. All kinds of plans and initiatives, No Child Left Behind race to the top, but plenty of frustration with changes in the pace of progress. Last week, candidate Mitt Romney weighed in. School choice, he said. Transparency, private lending for higher ed. Is that the ticket? This hour, On Point, Mitt Romney's education vision. You can join the conversation. Do you see a new way here, an improvement on George W. Bush's way, Barack Obama's way? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With us first today from Bethesda, Maryland, is Allison Klein, reporter for Education Week and co-author of the blog K-12. She's covered Romney's education rollout. Allison, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Take us through the big chunks of this. What is Mitt Romney proposing, Allison?
Well, Mitt Romney's boldest proposal would be to have money that now goes, federal money that now goes for disadvantaged students and students in special education, follow the child instead of directly going to schools. So parents could choose to have the money go to a public school, or it could go to a private school, charter school, for online tutoring. And even for other online courses. So that would be a big change.
Is that a big deal? I mean, what kind of money are we talking about? Is this like subsidized breakfast money for the poor? Or how big a deal is it?
Well, this is the Title I, which is the largest federal program for disadvantaged kids, largest federal education program for disadvantaged kids. Mm-hmm. It's funded at about $14.5 billion a year. He's also talking about what's called IDEA, money funded under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which is funded at, $11.6 billion this year.
Somewhere, though, I read that if you wrap up all the money that goes to kids from state and federal, it's only about 10% maybe that we're talking about here. So if a child walks out the door of his school with this money attached, is that really enough for him to get an education somewhere else? Does he bring enough money to another school for that school to say, come on in, we can take you?
That's a really good question, and it's really unclear from the policy documents that Governor Romney's campaign put forward that this would cover the entire cost of state tuition at a private school.
Let's listen to a little bit from his speech. This was where he laid most of it out. It was last Wednesday at the Latino Coalition's annual economic summit in Washington. Latino Coalition, because he's talking a lot here about kind of echoes of George Bush's The Soft Bigotry of Low Expectations. He argued here for an overhaul in the whole American education system.
America's public education establishment shows no sense of urgency. Instead, there's a fierce determination to keep the things just the way they are. Here we are in the most prosperous nation on earth, but millions of our kids are getting a third world education. And America's minority children suffer the most. This is the civil rights issue of our era, and it's the greatest challenge of our time.
Mitt Romney last week, education and who gets it and who doesn't, the civil rights issue of our era. And then to Allison, to your point here, here he is talking about what children would be allowed to do to be portable with their federal money. They could up and go.
So as president, I'm going to give the parents of every low income and special needs student the chance to choose where their child goes to school. For the first time in history, federal education funds will be linked to the student so that parents can send their child to any public or charter school of their choice.
To any public or charter school of their choice, and there's more. I mean, in the written remarks here, it also said private school, Allison. Interestingly, he didn't say that in his speech, but I guess that is part of the package.
Certainly, that's what the Romney campaign has put forward. They've said charter school, they've said tutoring services, they've said online services. So it's really the full gamut.
We're going to look at exactly how that might play out. What else is in the Romney package here, Allison?
Well, Governor Romney also wants to expand the D.C. Opportunity Scholarship Program, which is a fairly small program that only operates, obviously, in one district, one school district, the District of Columbia. Mm-hmm. But critics have accused the Obama administration of trying to get rid of the program. They originally, allowed Democrats in Congress to scrap it, and then they didn't provide much new money for it in their most recent budget request.
What's the gist of that program? What's the significance of it? What's it do?
Well, basically, it's vouchers for low-income kids to be able to afford private schools in D.C., including Sidwell Friends, the school that Mr. Obama's daughters go to.
Okay. Now, if he's going to make things more portable and give vouchers, what about school? Do schools have to accept people who would show up at their door? How's that work, Allison?
Well, that's actually another piece of the proposal that's still unclear. Certainly, you know, if a school is already oversubscribed, it's not clear that they would have to take these children in.
But I'm looking at the sort of a printout summary of his plan, and it says it would require states to adopt open enrollment policies for students receiving Title I and the special needs funding, and to eliminate caps on charter and digital schools. Like, take off the caps, let them in.
Well, the caps are on the number. That's usually referring to the number of charter schools in a state as opposed to the number of students that can go into a particular charter school.
Okay.
So really it's unclear, again, how this would work with district policies. You know, he's saying he wants to adopt open enrollment, but, you know, it's unclear how this would work in terms of what proposals districts already have in place for their neighborhood schools. It's unclear that you could really force a private school, for instance, or a tutoring program for that matter, to accept one of these students.
So we'll look at how that would work. No Child Left Behind. He wants transparency, but he doesn't want government intervention to push schools if they're not hitting their marks. What's the Romney change on No Child Left Behind?
Well, the Romney change on No Child Left Behind is consistent with what a lot of Republicans in Congress are proposing. What he wants to do is create these school report cards that would be more consistent, he says, than what schools already have to do, among states. That would include state test results and district test results. The parents could compare schools apples to apples. He also wants each state to develop its own A through F grading system, grade schools on an A through F scale.
Mm-hmm. And the idea there is what? Would they lose funding or be required to make certain changes if they got a low grade, or they just have the public walking away from them, presumably, to a better school?
That's exactly Mr. Romney's point. He's assuming that schools that have a low grade, parents wouldn't opt to send their children there, and then they would be forced to get better. But there wouldn't be any sort of federal sanctions or federal hammer like what we have now under No Child Left Behind under Mr. Romney's plan.
So for K-12, and we'll look for a minute at higher education, K-12, is this big deal change being outlined here, Allison? I'm seeing lots of commentators. Jay Matthews today in the Washington Post says, you know, Republicans and Democrats, since Bill Clinton, have been so close on education that they have to sort of tweak up the differences in a political season to make them sound different, but they're essentially on the same page. Is this a big deal change from No Child Left Behind, from Race to the Top, or not?
I think this is a big deal change. I think having Title I and special education money follow the child, even though, as you said, it's only 8%, that money is part of the bloodstream of school finances, and if truly students could take it wherever they wanted, that would really, that would be very hairy for district finances. In addition, when it comes to the school report cards, as I said, that's consistent with what many Republicans in Congress are proposing. At the same time, the Obama administration has been very explicit about how states should turn around their lowest performing schools, and so this would be a big departure because states under the Romney plan would come up with their own interventions.
So their own interventions, meaning it would no longer be federally dictated, but, schools in No Child Left Behind states have lowered a lot of the, or pushed to lower their requirements. So is there a guarantee that states would keep high standards?
Well, a number of states, 46 states in the District of Columbia, have joined the Common Core State Standards Initiative. That's something that, you know, states have kind of done on their own,
right,
although arguably the Obama administration has encouraged it.
Mm-hmm.
So, presumably they would, keep marching on forward with that no matter who's president. But it's unclear whether the Romney plan would really change standards. And certainly there's a lot of kind of applause and approval of high standards in Romney's education documents.
Higher education, candidate Mitt Romney pushing for a return to more private lending to students borrowing to go to college. Why that push, and what would it mean?
Well, that's actually also another thing that's a bit unclear from his proposal. He said that he wants a bigger role for the private sector in administering student loans. I'm sure, as some of your listeners would know, President Obama scrapped what's called the Federal Family Education Loan Program, where loans are made by subsidized lenders, in favor of the direct lending program where students borrow right from the Treasury. Republicans have been very, very critical of that move. It sounds like Mr. Romney agrees with them, but it's unclear exactly what the new role for the private sector would be under a Romney administration.
And the digital front, across the board, Romney seems very wide open to private online education, even for K-12, Allison.
Yes, that's certainly something a lot of schools are starting to experiment with. I guess the most robust piece of his proposal there would be allowing students to use federal funding to pay for online courses. That's a big departure from what we see now.
Is that holding out a prospect of more private commercial education in this country, even at the elementary school level?
Again, we'd have to see how it would play out. But yes, that seems to be what Mr. Romney is driving at and aiming for.
So how do you compare the scale of what he's pushing here to George W. Bush's No Child Left Behind, to Barack Obama's race to the top? Who's got the bigger change crowbar in hand?
That's an interesting question because, again, there's we only sort of see the bones of Mr. Romney's proposal. There are a lot of unanswered questions. Certainly, George Bush's No Child Left Behind was probably the biggest change that federal education policy had seen in about 50 years. Race to the Top sort of pushed states and incentivized states to make their own changes. So it's a different kind of hammer. He's using, in this case, instead of states like Mr. Obama used, he's using parents as the lever for change.
Allison, parents and their decisions about where those kids might go to school or get their education. Allison Klein with Education Week. Thank you so much for being with us today, Allison.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about education and Mitt Romney. He's finally talking about it after the long primary season when it was pretty low profile. We're looking at the Romney twist on education reform. The Republican, now probably sealing it up today in Texas, soon to be formal nominee for the presidency. Let's drill right on in here. Joining me in the studio now is Dr. Martin West, professor at Harvard's Graduate School of Education. He's one of Governor Romney's education advisors, helped put together the ideas rolled out by Governor Romney last week. Marty West, thanks so much for being here. Welcome to On Point.
Thanks. It's great to be with you, Tom.
And from Washington, Ulrich Boser joins us, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, where he analyzes education. His latest report was on President Obama's education initiative, Race to the Top. Ulrich Boser, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Marty West, first to you. Were anything that surprised you here? Were you in on hammering this whole thing out? What do you see as the general profile of what Mitt Romney's suggesting?
Well, I think Allison summed it up nicely. I think what we have here, although it's unusually detailed for what's often laid out in the context of a presidential campaign, is really more the bones of the policy rather than something that's entirely fleshed out. But the basic principles are very clear. The basic principles are that the role of the federal government is to expand choice and innovation, and it does that primarily by putting the decisions about how federal funds that support low-income and special needs students are used into the hands of the parents to make those decisions. He wants to improve transparency about both performance and, importantly, also about spending on public education in the United States. And then something Allison didn't talk about, he wants to change our approach to improving teacher quality in the United States. He recognizes that teachers are the most important input in the education process. And so he's proposed to eliminate the highly qualified teacher requirements of No Child Left Behind, which rely exclusively on certification as a guarantor of effectiveness. And instead, he's going to encourage states to carve their own programs that are based more on recognizing and rewarding our teachers who are most effective in the classroom.
Put in plain English, what would that mean? What is the change that he's suggesting here for teacher quality?
So one aspect of No Child Left Behind was that it required that every classroom in a core academic subject be staffed by a highly qualified teacher. Unfortunately,
the that way sounds good.
It sounds good. It's hard to be against it. But the way in which it's defined relies primarily on traditional measures of certification, which are unfortunately are poor predictors of teachers' actual...
You mean whether they've got a master's or hours beyond a master's
or years of experience. And unfortunately, these are not effective predictors of teachers' effectiveness in the classroom.
What's the alternative? You let anybody step in there and do it, or...
Well, that you don't have the federal government telling states that they need to apply those across the board, that they can't grant exceptions.
But you don't want the states throwing
them
a dog catcher up there to teach mathematics necessarily.
Of course not. So states will need to come up with their own practices around this issue, as they had traditionally done before No Child Left Behind was in place, which generally did rely on certification as the primary indicator, but also would allow them to make exceptions when needed to meet demand. And only to do that, though, if they're combining that with efforts to improve teacher evaluation systems in order to be able to identify teachers' effectiveness in the classroom.
Right. Let me turn it back to school choice, if I may.
Yeah.
How many American children do you think might be able to take advantage of this? How big a deal is it? Low-income and disabled students have federal dollars attached to them because of special supports there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they can take with them. But is that window dressing? Is that a big number? Is that enough to change the outcomes of American education broadly?
Well, I think... just to answer your basic question about numbers, it's roughly 20 to 25 million students who are currently eligible for these programs.
Low-income and disabled combined.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a significant share of the public school population of the United States that would be eligible to make these decisions. I think the answer to how much of a change it is really depends on whether states embrace this and also accept the principle that funding should be following the child to the school of their choice.
Do they have to do that for this to work? States still have their finger on this?
Well, I think it's an important change regardless of whether states do it. But
he can't just mandate it. Or can he?
He could attach it just like No Child Left Behind mm-hmm. attaches requirements that states need to follow as a condition of receiving
Title
I
funds. You
have to
let them take the money and go wherever they want.
That's right. And so some states already do have policies in place that allow funding to follow students. And the hope would be that more states would adopt this along with allowing their federal dollars to follow the child. And that's when you might be able to see substantial inter-district choice across district lines,
mm-hmm.
enough funding potentially to allow students to enroll in private schools. Even without that, though, clearly would create incentives for schools to attract low-income students. Because they bring money
with
them.
But would they necessarily bring the state money with them? Because isn't that where the bulk of the money lies?
Well, state money tends to follow students to the district that mm-hmm. they enroll in
yeah.
And then be allocated to schools based on the number of students enrolled. So in that sense, it does follow the students to
okay.
public schools.
Mm-hmm.
It also follows students to charter schools or across district lines. So state funding really is already allocated according to these principles in many ways. The significant requirement here, though, is that schools, districts would have to provide choice to parents who are participating in these programs, and they would also, because empowering demand in the school choice equation is only effective if you have a supply of quality schools. States would also be required to take steps to expand the quality of the supply of schools, like lifting caps on charter schools, like making sure that you have appropriate policies for online education.
Martin West, stand by. Let me take it to Ulrich Boser in Washington. Ulrich, I'm sure you've been paying close attention here. The Romney, I guess the thrust of it, sort of a freer market for parents to decide where they want their kids to go to school. What do you make of the gist of what's being laid out here, Ulrich?
Well, the first thing that I'd say is that Governor Romney talks about problems in American education, but he's really offered few concrete proposals, right? And the evidence suggests that he is far more interested in slashing funds for education than anything else.
What's the evidence of that?
Sure. Lots of pieces of it. Last month, Romney promised a group of donors that he would consolidate the Department of Education or, quote, make it a heck of a lot smaller. Romney also supports the House Republican budget plan, which would cut federal education funding for disadvantaged students by as much as $2 billion. There's
a lot
of evidence.
Paul Ryan plan. How big a percentage cut is that, $2 billion?
It's a significant percentage. Mm-hmm. The way that that plan is structured is it's saying a 20% cut off of multiple areas. But mm-hmm. what we see is that clearly education would suffer a big rollback. And the federal role in education is to provide funds for disadvantaged students. So mm-hmm. I think it's disconcerting to me to see Romney saying this is the education, this is the civil rights issue of our time, but then proposing in another group that education funding for disadvantaged students should be rolled back. I mean, this is not the track record of someone who believes, I think, that education is a civil rights issue. But, this is what a track record mm-hmm. of someone who believes in focus groups.
Well, point taken on the what looks like it could be a contradiction there. But what about what Romney appears to be suggesting here is that you create a dynamic by letting parents choose that even without showering federal money down will incentivize schools to, you know, get off their duff and provide the best thing, or their kids, some of them, go elsewhere.
Look, choice makes a difference when there are good choices. This is a really important point, so I'm just going to repeat it. Choice makes a difference when there are good choices. And many, many parents right now don't have good choices in front of them. And so what are we doing to help those parents whose fourth graders are struggling with reading, those parents whose middle schoolers are struggling with basic algebra? What are we doing to help those parents? I think the president has put forth a number of very thoughtful proposals that do increase choice, that have raised the caps on charter schools, that have made more competitive programs. But to think that, to quote Romney, we are going to solve one of the greatest challenges of our nation by simply offering more choice, I think is very, very simplistic.
Marty West, does it get you a net gain if you are cutting funding, increasing choice but cutting funding? And you know that choice is limited by a lot of realities about what transportation and what mm-hmm. options are actually out there.
Well, so I haven't heard Governor Romney proposed specific funding cuts to education spending, and there's nothing in this plan that was released last
week. But if you support the Paul Ryan budget, they're baked in the cake there.
That's correct. That's correct. It's part of the bigger picture. I guess I'm surprised to hear Ulrich making exactly this argument, because he's the author of a really excellent report from the Center for American Progress on school productivity, which really comes to the basic conclusion that a lack of spending isn't the root of the nation's education problems, that in fact, there's a lot of evidence that schools aren't using their current resources more as productively as they should be, that this is a real drain on education spending and on really the economy as a whole, and that really we need to take steps to change the incentives that schools have in order to use their resources well. And so I see that as not at all a contradiction in terms, really an interpretation of the evidence.
Ulrich, incentives more important than funding, and it's tagged back to you. What do you say?
Sure. I think, look, most fourth graders are not reading at grade level, nor are most eighth graders reading at grade level. So the question is, should we then withdraw funds from the system or try and do better with the amount of money that we're spending right now? I agree with Marty West that dollars are not simply the answer, but it's a matter of spending our dollars productively. And if you look at Race to the Top, it is a program that created, I think, very thoughtful incentives that created a competition among states to make changes. And we saw real concrete results from that. We see that in states that didn't even win money, like Connecticut, mm-hmm. that passed some very thoughtful laws that reform teacher evaluation. And we see some very innovative stuff done by the states that did receive the money. Tennessee, as an example, has created this very innovative data analysis which identifies students who are in danger of dropping out and gives that information for teachers, really trying to empower teachers with the tools that they need to improve education today.
We have heard, Marty, a lot about the efficiency of Race to the Top as a kind of lever to get school states to do big things, even if the money doesn't end up showering on them.
No, I think there's no doubt that many of the policies that were included in Race to the Top that states were incentivized really to adopt have been good things. Governor Romney has been very clear about that. And What we need to keep in mind, though, is that Race to the Top was only a small part of what Obama's done in public education, that it was less than 5% of the total education-related funds that went out through the stimulus. The rest of those funds went out really to just propping up the status quo as it currently exists, with no strings attached, no requirements for reform. And really what they've done is prolonged the inevitable readjustment that's coming now as those stimulus funds recede and districts are forced to make the same cuts that they were making previously. So Race to the Top has done some good on the margin. States are now struggling to actually implement the promises that they've laid out. On the whole, the policies around teacher effectiveness that it encouraged states to adopt in particular are things that Governor Romney also wants to encourage.
We're talking about education. Everybody's got an opinion when it comes to teaching kids or getting them an education. Let me turn to some of our listeners, if I may. Martin West, Ulrich Boser. Let me go to Kathy in Buffalo, New York. Kathy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I've just been listening to what you gentlemen have been saying for a while. My first response when I heard the program was to ask a question regarding, I guess, Mitt Romney's ideas that to me are a culmination of Race to the Top. And if less money is going to, less federal money is going to be put into the schools, I guess, where is that money coming from? In regard to the charter schools, it seems to me, although it's not spoken of too often, that large corporations are encouraged to, and millionaires, billionaires, to invest money into these charter schools with their own agenda, with the promise of big tax breaks.
I don't know exactly who invests, but is it possible that they might, you know, bring a good education, even if they've got a profit incentive?
Well, I mean, I'm in Buffalo, and we've had the Bill and Melinda Gates Math and Science Technology Schools opened here, and you know, in probably some of the worst performing schools, and their program has been offered for a few years now, and the results aren't, you know, what was expected. I mean, to put it politely.
Yeah, Kathy, let us hold it right there, if I may, and get one more. Thank you for your call in Buffalo, Hartford, Connecticut. Eileen, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Building off what Kathy's saying, I think that Mitt Romney's fundamental agenda is to take money from the public sector and feed the private sector. He will do what he can to support his wealthy allies and privatization of all agencies that have been historically supported and funded by the federal government.
And we hear you don't like that, but the public sector hasn't exactly hit it out of the park lately on public education, Eileen.
That is very true. And in fact, in my own home, we've sent our children to private school for that very reason. But we've used our private dollars to send our kids to private school. But, you know, we've also benefited tremendously from public education. And the problems are complex. But I think his simplification of the problem is really just to support his private sector cronies.
Eileen, we've got it, and Kathy as well. Marty West, you hear skepticism right away there when the phone line's open to shifting resources to private education. What do you say?
I think the role of the private sector is something of a distraction here. Most of the charter school, the majority are mom and pop charters. Some are part of larger
management.
That
doesn't mean they're not commercially structured.
Well, but they're public schools. They're mm-hmm. open to all students who apply. They're publicly regulated. Mm-hmm. They can't charge tuition. And so I guess I don't understand the rhetoric around privatization when it comes to charter schools. There are some for-profit education management organizations running charter schools mm-hmm. in some places. Mm-hmm. Some of them have been quite successful, others less so, much like the performance of the charter sector more generally. Mm-hmm. But I don't see anything in this proposal that is systematically taking public funds and shifting it in the direction of a select group of private entrepreneurs. Really, it's saying that we shouldn't have a monopoly on the use of public education dollars, that other organizations should be able to open schools, and that they should all be evaluated based on their results, that we need a level playing field among schools evaluated based on their results.
And using that as a lever when parents have a little more choice to decide where their kids might go.
That's exactly right.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about education and Mitt Romney. He's finally talking about it. The Romney twist on education reform is our subject today. Marty West is with us. Martin West, he's an education advisor to Mitt Romney for K-12 education, assistant professor at Harvard University's Graduate School of Education. Ulrich Boser is here, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He's written a lot about the race to the top, President Obama's major program. We're going to hear a little later in the hour from Ginger Gibson with Politico about how all this plays out politically, but we want to hear from you. Elizabeth in Chesapeake, Virginia. You're on the air, Elizabeth. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have, of course, there's always in theory and then there's in practice, but my example is as a military family, when we transfer, the first thing I look at is the schools, and then I look for a home within that school area. So if I've got a child who's now going to the better school in the area, and kids outside of that area are using their tickets or whatever to get into that school, and the school is full, is it going to go to a lottery system of who actually can get into the school? And then secondly, if they are from outside of that area, who's going to provide the transportation? Because most of the time, the schools in the poor areas are the schools that are doing poorly.
Sure.
And then they have to be moved out of that school. So why aren't we focusing on fixing schools in each area instead of trying to transfer these kids around?
Marty West? Gets in? How do they get there? Why not just fix the school where they live? Parents like schools close to home.
Those are good questions. And I have to admit that the details in the proposal aren't entirely fleshed out, as I started to say. That being said, I think the basic principle that oversubscribed public schools taking public funds should admit students by lottery when they're oversubscribed is something that would be consistent with how charter schools operate more generally. And the policy is clear that school districts would not be required under, as a matter of federal policy, to accept students from out of their district unless the state decides that that's a policy that they want to adopt and incentivize themselves.
Right.
The hope is that, as I said, states would do so and that they would allow state and local funds to follow students to those schools. But that's something that's needed, that's going to be needed to be worked out at the local level. But I agree with Elizabeth's basic point that there's no substitute for improving schools where they are and expanding the supply of good schools in all areas. People want to go to schools near where they live. And so that should be our primary focus.
But that's not really the gist here, right? I mean, it's school choice, the threat of parents going elsewhere that would incent schools to do better. But
no, but that's why it's also combined with measures to allow new schools to open everywhere, expanding the cap on charter schools, allowing for more forms of alternative online education to meet demand where it exists. Also on this point that I think has been a little bit mischaracterized in the conversation mm-hmm. so far, it's right that Governor Romney is proposing that the federal government no longer eliminate a specific set of restructuring options for schools identified as being underperforming mm-hmm. As a result of testing. But that doesn't mean he doesn't think anything should be done to turn them around. He's just acknowledging that the federal government is very poorly positioned to specify exactly what changes need to happen at the local level. His position is that if you provide local decision makers with much better information about school performance, that they'll be able to take the steps that are needed to turn those schools around.
So you've got some skepticism here from people who dealt with Governor Romney in Massachusetts. Paula writes, what did he do for education in Massachusetts? Balance the budget by cutting monies to cities and towns, which devastated school districts all over the state. This plan is all rhetoric, Paula writes. Ulrich, what about more schools as the answer? Just put up more schools so kids have access to alternatives.
I think that has some role. We do need to have more offerings for parents, more choice for them. And I think we've seen that with some of the administration's efforts around charter schools. But when you think about
the Obama administration has also pushed to lift caps, made some teachers' unions pretty unhappy with that, right?
That's correct. There has been some disagreement about the precise role of charter schools and also around the role of schools being restructured. Mm-hmm. But what we saw from Race to the Top is that 15 states did lift their caps, allowing more of these schools to come online. But it's been a two-pronged approach, both offering some more choice, public school choice specifically, but then also doing more to help turn around these low-performing schools, telling them some and providing them both with funds and tools, and also being very specific about ways that they need to turn themselves around. I do think that Romney's plan says, oh, we should offer transparency, but a lot of that is currently on the books. No Child Left Behind does require states and schools to offer these report cards. I think essentially what you're seeing is a rollback of accountability, a rollback of saying, listen, low-performing schools, there should be some sanctions here. There should be ways that these schools need to fix themselves or have states and districts be more involved in how they operate and how they function. And I think that's reasonable.
Marty, there's already a transparency, Ulrich says, and Romney would roll back accountability.
Well, No Child Left Behind has provided a ton of data about student performance. And Governor Romney, back in 2008, again now has praised that aspect of the law, what it's done. It has provided much less in the way of transparent information about schools' performance. So it evaluates schools in a yes-no way. They're making adequate yearly progress or they're not. It's based exclusively on the level at which students are performing rather than how much they learn over time, which is obviously a better indicator of what the school is doing as opposed to what the students are bringing to the school. It's based entirely on proficiency rates, and therefore it fails to reward schools for progress that students make who are well below or well above those proficiency rates.
So an A through F grade system would be more informative?
It would be far more informative. So there's a lot we can do to take the data that No Child Left Behind has provided and turn it into useful information to inform decisions and accountability policies. These problems with No Child Left Behind are well acknowledged on both sides of the aisle. And I think it's really been a failure of the president's leadership that he didn't work with Congress, especially in those 2 years where he had unified Democratic control of both houses of Congress, to get a reauthorization of No Child Left Behind that addresses these basic shortcomings and makes it a much more constructive influence.
Let me go to Alex in Berlin, Vermont. Alex, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. You know, I just, I'm not sure if giving families the opportunity to change schools would do much. A lot of these low-income families, I'm not sure how they would get the child to the school without having to, you know, maybe move themselves, which they might not be able to do. But on a greater scale, I think the way that we're teaching our children might be a little, maybe not the best way to do it. A lot of our state standards aren't really aligned with child development and even human development. I think it needs, like Elizabeth suggested, maybe we need to look at the schools that we already have and change the way that those work a little bit more. You know, I think that might be a good thing to look at.
Alex, let us pick it up. I mean, Marty, two things there. One is just getting kids to these alternative schools, these hypothetical alternatives. Transportation is not an easy deal. This is not if you're low-income students. Or, you know, who says there's anybody at home who can just sort of hang around and do the carpool thing if there's anybody to pool with? And then the point comes again, fix the schools we've got, please.
So I don't think the governor is proposing that everyone will be able to take advantage of this program, and a lot will depend on the degree to which states implement it in a faithful way, in a way that's true to the intent of his proposal, which is to expand choice rather than just provide people with a menu of options, most of which are unrealistic.
You said a lot there, but how does it boil down to getting a ride to school?
Well, that has not been specified in the proposal.
Okay.
I think it would be very hard for the federal government to dictate the specifics of transportation arrangements in the nation's 14,000-plus school districts.
So you can imagine it's an issue for families.
It's obviously going to be an issue in those places that do a better job in that area. We'll obviously see parents have a broader range of options.
Yep.
And again, there's no substitute for improving the schools where they are, and that's not something that Governor Romney is ignoring. I actually want to go back to something that one of your commenters said about Romney's record in Massachusetts. He actually had a very strong record as a executive in public education as governor. Under his leadership, he maintained the nation's most rigorous standards in K-12 education. He defended a high school graduation requirement, and he saw students respond by becoming the first in the nation to first state in the nation to lead the country in both fourth and eighth grade math and reading. And the state has sort of maintained that positive trajectory.
It's a high performing state in education. I want to ask you about class size, number of students in a class. Governor Romney last week saying in West Philadelphia that, you know, you don't really need smaller classes, that a lot of the highest scoring countries around the world have big class sizes. Did he say what he meant there? Class size not so important?
Governor Romney has looked carefully at the research on this and said exactly what he meant, which is that while on the margins, all else equal, it might be better to have your child in a smaller class. Many parents prefer to have their child in a smaller class, that the systems that are most highest performing internationally and both within the United States tend to actually invest their dollars in the quality of teachers, that is paying teachers more rather than investing in smaller classes. And that tends to produce higher results overall. So when we invest in class size reduction, oftentimes we're doing that at the expense of investing in teacher salaries, and the quality of education can suffer as a result.
One more call. Adam in Nashville, Tennessee. Adam, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm a teacher. I'm a middle school teacher, eighth grade, at an inner-city school in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Our building was built in 1952. We don't have central heat and air. We heat the building with a boiler, and we cool the building with window units, which are so loud that I can either have them on and be cool, or I can teach because I can't speak over it.
Yeah.
You know, I have a classroom of 35 kids, all low socioeconomic status, which if you look at it, socioeconomic status is the largest predictor of student success, right? The politicians, everyone wants to talk about teachers and things like that. If you look at socioeconomic status, that's the largest predictor. You know, these kids are coming in hungry. I have to expect them to know or want to know what a gerund or an adverb is. And as far as charter schools and school of choice goes, in teacher evaluations, what happens with these magnet schools and things like that is they skim basically the quote-unquote cream off the top. And so then what I'm left with are students that are basically deficient or need help and individual attention. And being in a classroom of 35, it's difficult to give a student that is reading on a third grade level what he or she needs, and also give a student that's reading on an 11th grade level what he or she needs.
We get it, Adam. I mean, you lay out the challenges right there, and they are robust and multitudinous. They're a kind of frontline voice. Get real about what's going on. I really appreciate that call. I want to get one more voice here. We've just got a couple minutes left in the hour, but Ginger Gibson is with us from Politico, national political reporter there. Ginger, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So why this timing on education for Mitt Romney? Why does he bring it up now? And what do you think he's angling for? I mean, you know, presumably this is what he wants for American education, but he's also in the middle of a big political race. Whose vote is he looking to get with this program?
Pollsters tell us that the education issue really appeals to women and Hispanics, that it's the type of issue that if a candidate appears strong on those groups, which are undecided and which could help largely make up the decision in this election, are inclined to view the candidate more favorably. Mitt Romney hasn't really talked about education on the stump during the primary. It wasn't a big issue for him while he was governor in terms of other issues that he's really highlighted. But he's picked now while he's trying to start laying out his own ideas. His campaign's putting an issue out a week, and last week we saw education as one that they think he can play strong to those groups of voters.
Who does school choice, that message, who does it reel in the voting booth?
Mothers are really interested in hearing about school choice. They want to be able to make the best decision for their child. And telling them, I'm going to give you the option to send your kid to the best school and help you maybe pay tuition or go to a better charter school, is going to appeal to those women voters. And we look at polls, and we look at exit polls, and we see that women are a large voting bloc. They vote more often than men, and they can really help decide an election. So school choice is the kind of thing that appeals to those groups.
Is this a swing state issue? Is it an issue all over the place? Is it a bring out the Republican base issue for Mitt Romney, Ginger?
It's about closing the gap, the women gap, the minority gap that he currently has in the polls. It's going to help him in swing states. It's going to help him across the board. Not exactly an issue that gets the Republican base really riled up. I think he talks about jobs and the economy. Those are the kind of issues that are going to get them excited. Taxes as well. But education is the kind of thing that appeals to the undecided voter, the person who's looking at a large variety of things and might go either way and might have looked at President Obama's Race to the Top legislation, which was considered largely successful and helped you know, try to counter that in making up their minds.
Does President Obama look vulnerable on the education front, or you say largely successful? Does the public look and say, well, he's done all right?
You know, the education front is something we're going to see play out in how each side tries to cast their own opinions. When we look at Mitt Romney's proposals and we look at Race to the Top, there's a lot of similarities there, even if both sides aren't admitting it. School choice is part of Race to the Top. Teacher incentives, part of Race to the Top. Most of us don't think back that far, but if we remember to when Race to the Top happened, the teachers' unions were not in love with it. Mitt Romney's going to try to paint the president as someone who's in league with the teachers' unions who are trying to stifle education, and they're going to be playing a messaging game here, but a lot of their goals are very similar. So it's not exactly a vulnerability. It's more of a messaging war. Who can see sort of the moment and get people to think their plan is better? We've seen Republican governors in a number of states go after the teachers' unions. We look at Chris Christie. We look at Scott Walker. To a smaller degree, Bobby Jindal in Louisiana. And they have been successful by doing so. So Mitt Romney's trying to take maybe a page out of their playbook and duplicate that on the presidential level.
Ginger Gibson, national political reporter for Politico, joining us from Arlington, Virginia. Ginger, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Ulrich Boser, do you think this is a vote mover for Governor Romney?
I don't. I think that voters are going to see beyond the rhetoric, and I think ultimately that the administration has put together some very, very thoughtful plans, and that that's ultimately where voters are going to lean towards the results that they've seen, both on the K-12 side and on the higher ed side.
Marty West, we just got 20 seconds. Is it an education mover? I mean, could it? Does it have the leverage to change what seems implacably unchangeable in this country?
It's hard to see education rising to the top of the agenda in this election as it was in 2000. And that's not why I think Romney's talking about it. I think he's talking about it because he sincerely believes it's the most important issue facing the nation going forward. And he wants to find the solution.
Martin West with Harvard's Graduate School of Education. Thanks so much for being with us today, Marty.
My pleasure, Tom.
Ulrich Boser at the Center for American Progress in Washington. Thank you, Ulrich.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for your thoughts. Thanks for chiming in. Great to have you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.